Welcome back to the EIU podcast series on what young urologists need to know. This is segment two, where we discuss the balance of life of young urologists. In this third episode, we are joined by Prokar Dasgupta, professor of surgery at Surgical Academy at King's Health Partners, professor of robotic surgery and urological innovation at King's College in London, United Kingdom. Also, Juan Luis Vasquez, a consultant urologist in Zealand University Hospital in Roskilde, associate professor in Copenhagen University in Denmark. Additionally, Dr. Vasquez is a chairman of EAU Young Urologist Office. Together, they will discuss mentorship and peer support. Join us as we embark on this informative journey.
Welcome for this podcast in collaboration with the Young Urologist Office and European School of Urology. Today, we have Professor Prokar Dasgupta from King's College in London, and we're going to discuss a little bit about mentorship. Prokar, I would like to start citing a very important person, Sir Isaac Newton. And he said once that you have ever seen older than others, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. So here he gives credit to those who help him succeed. And this is something that particularly highlights the importance of mentorship. What do you feel about it?
Thank you so much, firstly, for inviting me. While success in a training program means so many things to so many different people, i.e., no two trainees are exactly the same wherever they might be, but the role of the mentor is central and vital in this. And again, there are, as you know, different styles of mentorship, and we can discuss those as we go along.
That's definitely correct. There is no the real recipe for being a mentor, because all the mentees can be particularly different. And I believe that we need mentorship more than ever before. I am a millennial, and millennials and Generation Z are born in the financial impact of the Great Recession of 2008, but also the pandemic. So we might be behind professionally and financially. So we need to kind of like catch up. We know that millennials comprise more than 75% of the workforce by 2025. And 79% of us say that mentorship is important. So I think it is imperative to support these generations. Something that we learned from the pandemic is that we need to focus on three areas in particular. One of it is skill development. The other one is stress management. And the other one is emotional intelligence. And by saying this, I want to kind of like recommend the EAU Talent Incubator, because with the EAU Talent Incubator, we are covering all this. Do you agree that younger generations are particularly in need of these points, focus areas?
Yes, absolutely. COVID was absolutely terrible and really exposed the weaknesses that we had in our training programs through no fault of anybody, because suddenly the mentees find themselves completely isolated, not just from their mentors, but also their peer groups, because you can get a lot of support from your peers. And not only the mentees, I mean, if you look at, as I call it, from cradle to grave, if you look at the medical students, they were even worse affected, because they couldn't get to their lessons. Certainly those who wanted to become surgeons could not get into the operating room to observe their trainers operate. So skills, yes, I think we do skills extremely well, particularly within the EAU. And I'm very proud of what we have done within the EAU with skills. Stress, stress management. I have a very simple thing that I say to everyone. If you are under stress, take four deep breaths, not one, not five, four deep breaths, and then focus on something completely different. And I was taught this during the pandemic by a stress-relieving trainer who has nothing to do with surgery. And emotional resilience, of course, is even more challenging, but more and more important as we realize that COVID has affected the mental health of so many of our students and mentees. So couldn't agree more. I think those three are the pillars of what modern mentorship should be like.
Oh, definitely. And we also know that more than 70% of the, in those places where you have mentors, more than 70% of people are more likely to say that there are opportunities for advancement. 89% say that are likely to say that their colleagues appreciate or value their contributions. And 91% are more likely to say that they are satisfied with their job. So do you agree that mentorship is it's very important to achieve success? When young professionals feel cared for and invested in, they also have a higher commitment for the organization that they work at. I'm just curious here. Did you have a mentor?
Oh, yes.
Or several mentors?
Oh, I had a number of mentors. When I was in medical school, I remember my anatomy teacher, who was absolutely inspirational, which is why I took on becoming a surgeon, because a lot of it was applied anatomy. And then as I progressed through my surgical training, I had Professor Chowdhury, who was famous for removing these very large spleens. But not only that, he was also famous for encouraging me to look at the science behind why removing these spleens saved the lives of patients who would otherwise die of a tropical disease called leishmaniasis, which at the time was almost untreatable, claimed many lives. And this is in rural India. And then as I went through the mentorship scheme, I was inspired at the time by one of my seniors, Dr. Basu, who actually took the first Dornier lithotripter in the late 80s into Calcutta in India. Can you believe it? Late 80s, when Dornier was changing the way stones were being treated. And a number of my own family members were treated by him and had previously had open stone surgery. So again, that was a serious inspiration. Of course, later in life, meeting with Professor Fowler, who, as you know, is famous for sea fibers and botulinum toxin. And later on, Richard Tiptoft, who inspired me to join the team at Guy's and really change the course of my life and career. So I've had these very nice and kind people smile at me and be there as my mentor. And I'm ever grateful to them.
That's really amazing. Do you think there is a common characteristic in these different mentorships that you have had? Is there something that characterized it?
Yes. You know, there is one thing, Juan, which I think binds all these people that I mentioned. They are fundamentally kind people, although the style of mentorship was different. Some were what you would call old-fashioned, because that was how things worked. You obeyed your bosses at the time more than you did your family, your father. But they were all universally kind. And I think as a mentor, it is very, very important to be kind to your mentees, understanding that each of them has slightly different needs at slightly different times.
Yeah, I agree. Kindness is extremely important. Also because I believe that mentorship, it is a relationship. But true mentorship is not a one-way street. It is a both-way relationship, and it has to be nurtured. So actually, mentor relationships evolve like friendship. And I believe it requires time. How do you feel your mentors had what did for getting the time, appropriate time for you?
Yeah, look, again, I agree. It's a two-way street completely. And you know, one of the things I tell people around me, especially my mentees, is while they think that they are learning from me, I am also learning from them. Now, they might find it very difficult to understand, but each time I meet someone, I am learning and imbibing from them. It's not a one-way street. In fact, I run my team like a startup. I do not have a pyramidal structure where I am the boss and everyone listens to me. I actually ask people how many committees are there within the King's Academic Surgery, and the answer is none, because Startups generally do not have committees, and the best ideas win. So I am learning from my mentees all the time, and I hope that they're learning from me.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the beautiful things about these mentorship relationships, and it's that both parts benefit of it. Another beautiful thing about the mentorship is that it perpetuates itself. So mentees become mentors. And that's my next question. You were a mentee at some point, and now you are definitely a mentor for many people. How do you manage?
Absolutely. As I said, you know, I have been in Guy's and St. Thomas's. Very privileged to be in one of the best institutions in the UK. But with that privilege comes the amazing opportunity to look back at what I have done and what people did for me. So I can tell you today, I have probably personally trained in surgery, particularly in robotic surgery, over 50 mentees. And we have run a BSc in surgical science because, as you know, I'm a clinician scientist, so half my time is spent doing science. And in this Bachelor of Science degree, we have had 300 plus students over a decade. So I am hoping that many of them will go on to become leaders in urology themselves. Some of them will become clinician scientists. And I hope they will give back to society, to their mentees, what they learned as being mentees themselves. So it is a self-perpetuating cycle. And we must not underestimate that. There are some people, by the way, I must say, who are excellent surgeons, but are not great teachers and mentors. And that's not a fault. Some people just cannot sit there and watch their trainee perform an operation. They are thinking, I can do this in half the time. That is not the point. The point is to do it safely and make sure that no harm comes to the patient. At the same time, the mentee who has maybe traveled 10,000 miles from across the globe to learn from you, learns. So I think that is something very important to remember. Not every great surgeon is a great mentor. And that's not a problem. That is how it is.
Yeah, we have to accept that. Now that I said that mentorship is not a one-way street, I would also like to comment a little bit on how is it to be a mentee. I think it's also a responsibility to be a mentee, and it also requires time. It also is important that the mentee shows his value to the mentor. So what are your demands for your mentees?
So the mentees, look, in UK, we have a very structured program. And I will describe the program for those who are purely clinical and also those who are clinical academic, because the pathways are slightly different. They are both guided by something called the ISCP. It's a big acronym, but all it means is Intercollegiate Surgical Curriculum Program. This has been ongoing for a number of years, and you can see it on the ISCP website. But in 2021, just about 2 years ago, that changed. It was very much based on competency before, where you had to fill in a number of, you had to do a number, say, you know, 180 TURPs or 100 TURBTs to be quote unquote signed off. And the criticism was that we were just playing to numbers. The current curriculum, I think, is better because it is outcomes-based, and it is telling the mentee that they need to be ready to become a consultant or an attendee, depends on which part of the world you work in, i.e. make the jump from becoming a mentee to a mentor themselves, on day one. So they need to have the competencies that would allow them to become a day one consultant. And they are then reviewed by other things, not just surgical skills, but human factors. They are not looked at by a single mentor, but an entire review happens with the consultants in the department, i.e. the mentors in the department, and that is called MCR, or multi-consultant review. So they get a rounded view from all their seniors, which I think builds a much better and rounded urologist. Now, the clinical academics are led by two programs. One was called the Coleman program, which happened sort of about 15, 20 years ago. And that was then modified by a famous man called Mark Walport. So it's called the Walport program. So these trainees go through what is called a clinical fellowship. Then they take 3 years out to do a PhD. So they're lab-based mainly. And then they go back to becoming a clinical lecturer, whereby they are not full-time clinical, but 50% clinical and 50% academic, with a view, like you, Juan, to become a clinician scientist at the end of it. So that is a longer program. And then, of course, for many people who want to do flexible working, this system adapts to flexible and part-time working, because many people have children, for example, and looking after the children is as important as training. So they do the two in parallel. And each of these trainees or mentees every year will have something called the annual review of competency progression. So they meet a panel where all these various aspects of their training is assessed. So it's a very structured program in the UK, which I think is probably better than just see one, do one, and teach one.
Yeah, definitely. How is the match of the mentor and mentee? How does it work? The reason why I'm asking this is that usually you see like the mentor picks the mentee, but there are people out there saying that the power relies in the hands of the mentors, but it should be the other way around, that the mentees should pick their mentors. But how does that match work in the UK?
So it works. It used to be very much what you're describing, where you would have, say, for my institution, there would be an advertisement in the British Medical Journal, and people from various parts of the UK or even from outside the UK would apply. And then there would be, from the long list, there would be a short list, and then they would come to an interview panel, and they would clearly have stated who they wanted to work with. Now it has become centralized, Yuan. So that, I think, takes away the bias. And there is a central committee where all the applications go in centrally. And a bit like the American match system, the mentees declare, say they are trainees from Newcastle or trainees from Bristol or have family somewhere near Birmingham, then they will give those hospitals as their first choice. And then they would be matched against their performance at a central interview rather than going to a regional interview. So things have changed in the last few years in the UK.
Something else I would like you to comment on, it's a little bit about diversity. And I was listening, I don't remember, but I think it was in the radio, and they were talking about CEOs out in the world, and the vast majority, over 95% of the CEOs in Fortune, were white men. And I have an idea that mentors tend to pick people who are similar to them. But if you want to get people a more diverse top, then you will have to start mentoring a more diverse group of people. And I'm a minority in Denmark, and I'm a different from Latin America, gay Latin American in Denmark. So I do feel that I had the opportunity to be mentored by great mentors, and now getting to the top in my department. But what's your view about this diversity issue? I mean, I assume you consider yourself also a minority somehow.
I lead by example. I have had the UK and Europe being incredibly kind to me. I was born and bred in India. I lived half my life in India. I was trained as a surgeon in India before I came over, and I've had the most fantastic people mentor me and then take me on as a colleague, not just within the UK, but as you know, I operate all over the world. You know, I have had people, for example, Lou Cavusi in Hopkins, Indy Gill, for example, really be very kind to me. Manny Menon, you know, why would one of the most prolific robotic surgeons in the world be kind to a trainee from India? But these people were kind, and within Europe, it has been the same thing. And I think the equality, diversity, and inclusion is vital. We cannot keep having people write papers saying, oh, there are very few female mentees, and very few of them go on to become mentors themselves. Well, the question is, what are we going to do about it? In my own department, we are incredibly diverse, not just where male-female is concerned, but in a wider variety of ways. And we actually have one of the largest departments in the country with colleagues who are highly skilled ladies. And, you know, for example, the person within the Royal College of Surgeons Council is Dorothy Kufeji. She's a lady, she's a pediatric surgeon, and I am extremely proud that she is representing us on the College Council. We also celebrate diversity in another way. We have something called the Bulkley Barry Cooper Professorship. It's a very interesting story where Margaret Bulkley actually, in Victorian times, lived their life as Dr. James Barry. Can you believe it? The first female fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons of England, except no one knew that James Barry was actually a woman until after their death. So our most prestigious professorship is named after Bulkley Barry. So it's not just lip service, and it's not just lip service because over the last few months, there has been some very, very serious issues with allegations, sexual impropriety in the workplace among surgeons. And this has alarmed all of us greatly. And through the College of Surgeons and wider bodies, I think we are trying to make sure that these things, which were often hidden, you know, often hidden behind the curtain, are not repeated because they're not fit for purpose. They were never fit for purpose, but especially now, I do not think people can behave that way. We need to be diverse and we need to treat our colleagues as equals, which is why I run a flat structure. As I said, for me, it's easy. I think I run a startup. That's how I live and that's how I mentor.
Yeah, I guess a lot of what you said before, and what you're saying now, it presumes in something that you said before that you have to be kind. So I think we are getting close to an end, but before I let you go, I would like to ask you for a piece of advice.
Yes.
We are, the AU Young Journalist Office, planning on starting a mentorship program.
Yes.
Where we're trying to make matches between mentees and mentors. If you had one piece of advice to give me, what would it be?
I am not really sure that I'm the correct person to advise anyone. But if the one thing I say is this is a fantastic initiative. And I think the EAU should lead on this, really do, really make it diverse, really match people, listen to what they want. You know, I have trainees coming from all over the world. My current fellow, Andrew Shepherd, is from Australia. He's traveled from Sydney to train with us to learn robotic surgery. Look at the sacrifice this man has made to come. So the EAU should centralize this. There is certainly a similar program of fellowships within BAUS, the British Association of Urological Surgeons. I think this is the way to go. We have to tailor these programs for our mentees. And by the way, if I may be controversial, I'll speak about this at the EAU next week. It has come out in the front page of the Royal College of Surgeons bulletin this month, where there is a call for mentorship programs and fellowship programs in open surgery. So despite being a robotic surgeon doing artificial intelligence and you name it, open surgery is not dead. And I think we need to keep an eye on having mentorship programs in open surgery because we need it as much as we do minimal access.
Well, thank you very much, Prokar. This was Prokar Dasgupta, someone that it's a pleasure to share these minutes with you and learn from you. And I would like to say on behalf of the EU, thank you for being here. And thank you all for listening. My name is Juan Luis Vasquez, and I'm the chairman of the AU Young Urologist Office. Well, this was our podcast on mentorship.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for this insightful episode. We are sure our listeners enjoyed it. To keep up with the latest EAU podcasts and stay informed on urological advancements, be sure to subscribe to our EAU podcast channel on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, keep learning and stay inspired.